This is good.
Countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Yes, we're here coming to you live from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. And we are glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Going to have an entertaining show for you. Well, we were. You know that old song, that old saying, best laid plans of mice and men, you know, blah, blah, blah. I do a little planning, although it may not sound like it. I do a little planning for the show every day, kind of what order I'm going to do things. I know. A lot of you are saying, what? He does? Really? Couldn't tell that. Well, you know, I get off on tangents sometimes. I'm like that. But I had this show all planned today for the first 40 or 45 minutes or so. We were going to attend a teleconference about health care. That's what we were going to do. We were all going to participate in it. You could call in and I could, comment. We were going to be live at this health care teleconference. And we haven't done that on this show. So I thought, well, you know, I don't have to do much for that 40 minutes of the show. All I got to do is ring the telephone number, and we'll all just participate in this discussion. No show prep for that. Well, I found out not very long ago that they decided not to have media at this teleconference. Yeah. And maybe they said that in the first place, and I didn't notice it. That's entirely possible. So anyway, boom, there goes my plans for today. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to sit here for 40 minutes. That's the time that I had allotted to this teleconference, and we're just going to sit here and talk amongst ourselves because I didn't have anything planned. No, really, I can think of something to talk about. Really, I can. But that's how it goes in talk radio. You never make your plans too solid. We've got a great show planned for you today. Coming up at 3:40 today, or right around there, we've got Representative Russ Carnahan from the state of Missouri. He's going to be with us, and we're going to talk about the jobs and how we think this recovery is happening, if it's happening or when it's going to happen. And the guest that I had promised you that is going to be really interesting is, and most of you won't know his name, it's the subject matter that's going to be interesting, Professor Alfred McCoy. Professor Alfred McCoy is a professor of... Well, what is he a professor of? I'm not sure of. He's at the University of Wisconsin. I don't know if it's political science or what, but he's written a couple of books, Policing America's Empire. He wrote the book called A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation from the Cold War. And he knows the subject of torture and why we got involved in it and when we got involved in it and how it's carried out and why and the whole business. He knows it inside and out. And he's going to be our guest in the second hour today. And we're also going to have Brian Frederick from Media Matters going to be with us. He's the editor at Media Matters, and we're going to talk a little bit about this media upheaval yesterday over this Holocaust Museum shooting. that is the big news today. Just like we thought it would be. A terrible thing happening there yesterday, as you all know. I heard Rush Limbaugh today, and you all know the story by now. The gentleman was guarding one of the guards there, professional guard at the Holocaust Museum. You wouldn't think you'd have to have armed guards at a Holocaust Museum, would you? But they do. And a guy gets out of his car, as I understand it, with a Confederate hat on, walks in with a rifle and starts firing, shot the guard. He later dies. And the shooter, from what I understand, is in critical care in the hospital. I don't know, 88 years old. A kook, no question. And it does appear to be a single act. He does appear to have done it by himself. But, of course, there's a lot of talk about it today. There was a lot of talk about it last night. Somebody mentioned to me that Bill O'Reilly didn't mention it last night. Well, here's the deal. Bill O'Reilly's show is taped in the afternoon. I bet you didn't know that. And he didn't have time to comment on it. Hannity didn't comment on it at all yesterday, from what I understand. And that's because, well, his writers didn't have time to sit down and write something for him to say. That's how Sean Hannity operates. And they couldn't come up with anything because they're probably flummoxed over who this guy was and his association. And I don't know if I have this up here right now. I want to look on the screen here and see. No, I don't have it. Rush Limbaugh said today, and I know you're tired of me bringing up that name, but I got to bring it up again today because what he said is germane to the conversation I want to have today. He said today that it's obvious that this guy was a leftist. Well, Rush, I don't know if you have any clue on how stupid that statement is. How absolutely, incredibly stupid a comment that is. If you knew anything, you horse's ass, if you knew anything about what goes on out in the right-wing, hardcore right-wing, crazy, lunatic fringe, you would know that this guy was no leftist. This guy was a freeper, a noted freeper, a well-known freeper. And for those of you that don't know who freepers are, they are the inhabitants, the cave dwellers, on a site called freerepublic.com, and they don't get much crazier than those folks. A guy by the name of Jim Robinson runs that website and takes in hundreds of thousands of dollars off these creeps that call themselves freepers. And I just want you to know, Rush, these guys aren't any leftists. There are no leftists on Free Republic. You see, Rush, I've been picketed by freepers. Oh, yes. My show's been picketed by honest-to-God freepers when I was in Crawford, Texas. And believe me, they're no leftists. Goons? Yes. Idiots? Yes. Insane, about half of them. Droolers? Yes. All of that. But they are not leftists. Don't know when I've heard a more ignorant statement than that. He was as hardcore lunatic fringe as anybody can get. And, of course, we all know where a lot of those folks are getting their education these days. Yes, we do. And, as you know, the Department of Homeland Security came out several months back and wrote a report on how, really, we had more to fear from domestic terrorists on the far right than we did from anybody else. And, of course, the media went crazy over it. Oh, yes. How dare they? And they made Janet Napolitano apologize for that report. Well, it turns out she had nothing to apologize for. Not at all. She had nothing to apologize for because they hit it right on the head right with that story. They had it nailed. It's really an amazing story. What's been going on since Barack Obama was elected. We all knew that there would be hatred and then some. And it's all come true. All of it. And more, perhaps, than I expected. And it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop anytime soon. And in case you didn't hear it, I took the hit for you. I went over to Fox. And at least there's one honest guy on Fox. It's Shepard Smith. And let's listen to Shepard Smith.
I read a lot of email around here, and the email to me has become more and more frightening. It's not a new thing. It's been happening over the past few months. It's been happening, you know, to some degree since the election process went along. I mean, we had a woman, we had a black man, we have, you know, we had a lot going on. And there are people now who are way out there on a limb, and I think they're just way out there on a limb with the email they send us, because I read it, and they are out there.
Yeah.
I mean, out there in a scary place. I'm going to read to you a little bit from one, and I'm not going to read the name, but this is, I promise, a representative sample of the kinds of things that we get here. Shepard, how dare you tell us to get over Obama not being a U.S. citizen? Where is the birth certificate? Where? He won't show it, so why are you so trumped up to believe it? I cannot stand Hussein. He is a socialist Marxist who is at fast rate destroying our country. If you're one who believes that abortion is murder, at what point do you go out and kill someone who's performing abortions? Well, I think we just learned for the killer of Dr. Till. If you are one who believes these sorts of things about the President of the United States, and I could read 100 of them like this.
Thousands.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. From today, people who are so amped up and so angry for reasons that are absolutely wrong, ridiculous, preposterous. Yet they are mad, and they're very mad that I just called it preposterous.
Well, if anybody wants to know the level of anger or whatever you want to call it, crazy, just take a spin around the blogs out there on the Internet. And just take half an hour and go out through and randomly see what is being said out there.
Yeah.
It is... it's frightening on a lot of different levels, and part of the problem, I think, is that they're feeding each other.
They are.
People are not going out there.
They're
and,
on websites
and, right.
feeding each other the same bunch of fact of hate that's not based in fact, and it's ginning itself up, and I guess if that's what you want to do with your time, maybe that's what you do. But more and more, it seems like people are taking the extra step and getting the gun out.
Yes, more and more, that is what seems to be happening, getting the gun out. Hey, we're having a little bit of a tech problem with our phones, and we're going to take a quick time out here, and we'll be back after we get it looked at.
2 days past 18, he was waiting for the bus in his army green, sat down in a booth in a cafe there, gave his order to a girl with a bow in her hair. He's a little shy, so she gave him a smile, and he said, would you mind sitting down for a while and talking to me? I'm feeling a little low. She said, I'm off in an hour, and I know where we can go. So they went down, and they sat on the pier. He said, I bet you got a boyfriend, but would you mind if I sent one back here to you? I cried, never gonna hold the hand of another guy. Too young, so him they told her, waiting for the love of a traveling soldier. Our love will never end, waiting for the soldier to come back again. Never more to be alone when the letter says, One Friday night at a football game, the Lord's Prayer said and the anthem sang. A man said, folks, would you bow your heads for a list of local Vietnam dead? Crying all alone under the stands was a piccolo player in the marching band, and one name read, and nobody really cared. But a pretty little girl with a bow in her head. I cried, never gonna hold the hand of another guy. Too young for him, they told her, waiting for the love of a traveling soldier. Our love will never end, waiting for the soldier to come back again. Never going to be alone when the letter says the soldier's coming.
Dixie Chicks there. I think we've got our phone problem all ironed out, thanks to you. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're doggone proud to be a member of the Head On Radio Network. You know that? We really are. It's great to be here and talk to you every day. We were talking about the killing yesterday, the awful murder that took place of one of the guards. And it just seems like over and over and over again, there's so much hatred. There's just so much hatred on the right. I don't know where it all comes from. Someone is trying to call, and it rings once and then stops. I don't know why that is. If that's you, let me check this phone here. There's no reason why that should happen. Checking. No, I don't know. Don't know what's up with that. Going to be a long day if her phone doesn't work right. But I think it's okay. I think Monique or Cobwebs called a few minutes ago, and it answered okay. So I don't know what's happening with that ring once and go away thing there. Anyway, don't want to air all of our technical troubles on. I don't think we're really having technical troubles, but oh, there it goes again. All right, let's try this. Hello, good afternoon. You're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, guys. Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin. Did you call several times?
Yeah.
What happened?
It'll just go one ring and just go into oblivion.
Oh.
But I guess it's working now, so.
Yeah, one ring and then it flips over and then I have to answer it manually, so that's probably why there's nobody. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. You know, the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys and all that, we all know what they do. Okay, you know, yes, they have blown the flames and add fuel to the fire for your lone gunmen like these. But it's the ones that you don't really suspect that are doing it, the more intellectual ones, like the Joe Scarboroughs, that you really have to watch out for, because they do their dirt to their edge these guys on. Every other word that comes out of Joe Scarborough's mouth in the morning when I watch the show, and he's probably the more watchable right-wing
mm-hmm.
people that I tend to watch, I can get some level of how the other side thinks.
Kevin, are you on a remote phone or a cell phone today?
I'm on the cell phone.
Okay, it's breaking up quite a bit on us here. I think that's
Okay, can I call you back on the landline?
Sure, sure.
Okay, no problem. Bye.
Yeah, sometimes cell phones don't work all that great. I know I get into certain spots and mine doesn't, but anyway, Kevin will call us back here in a minute. We have to keep the lines open right around 3:36 or so, waiting for the congressman to call then, and we'll have to find out what's going on in Washington with the jobs and the job recovery and all that, see if we're actually making any progress. There we go.
Hey, Guy?
Yes.
It's Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin.
Okay, so anyway, as I was saying, we all know what the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys do. Okay? That's the whatever, and they get paid a lot of money. It's the Joe Scarboroughs you got to watch out for. Because they're almost as guilty.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
They put a nicer, friendlier face on it, but they're almost as guilty.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, because in this morning show, every other word that comes out of his is welfare, socialism, you know, and we all know that's code for people, lazy people of color.
That's right. He's a true libertarian, I think. He's a true hardcore libertarian. And nobody but me.
Yeah, well, I just think he's one of these South Park conservatives where, you know, they want the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but they also want the status quo to maintain. They want white male privilege.
Sure do. They sure do want white male privilege. There's no question about that.
Yeah. You know, and those are the guys you have to watch out for. You know, and these are the guys that I tend to work with who... You know, so when the occasional Rush Limbaugh comes by, they'll do nothing. Okay, because to me, the Rush Limbaughs are the ones who, you know, they're few and far between. You know, most people tend to be the Joe Scarborough.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I agree with it. Probably has a little more credibility in most people's minds, a little more, you know, appears to be more centrist right off the bat. But then when you listen to them for a while, you find out that undercurrent's there, and they just have done a little bit better job of disguising it, I guess, and using the code as you mentioned before.
Yeah, and it is. You know, if you hear his show, every other word is socialism and welfare.
Right.
And big government.
And that sidekick of his goes right along with him on everything he says. She's the Alan Colmes of the morning show.
But it's like we need bigger government now to counterbalance corporate interests.
That's right.
You know, when that what's his name? The guy with the stock market.
Bernie Madoff?
No. The one on CNBC. Kubian. Him and another guy had a show together. And he always has his sleeves rolled up like he's training all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Kudlow?
Yeah. Kudlow? Sorry, Kudlow and Kramer.
He was like, well, this DM thing is a job for... Yes, it is. Because without jobs, who's going to buy the crappy stock that you've been peddling out on the street?
Yep, that you've been manipulating all along, and now they're once again manipulating the oil market, so driving up prices. we're the suckers. There isn't any question about it. There's always got to be some suckers, and we're the suckers, and we never seem to get anything done about it.
Yeah, well, all the thing is, it's just all the misinformation, even the so-called liberal media, which Fox says MSNBC is liberal. I would hate to think what real conservative is.
That's right.
You know, if they're fair and balanced, and MSNBC is liberal, I would hate to see what the conservative viewpoint is in their world.
Totally different.
Yeah.
Kevin, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. Hope everything's all right in Brooklyn today.
Oh, yes, it is. I have a bit of a cold, but everything is okay.
All right. Hey, good to hear from you, my friend.
Okay, my brother. Talk to you. Bye.
Yeah, to hear what he's talking about, what Kevin was talking about, let's take a little look. Joe Scarborough's prominent on this cut right here. I think this is the right one. Here we go. Scarborough's on this a lot.
A new report from Homeland Security suggests the bad economy may drive people to right-wing extremist groups.
Right-wing extremist groups, neo-Nazis, skinheads, the National Alliance, racist groups, anti-Semitic groups.
Gathering information on right-wing extremist activity in the United States. Does that mean they're going to be sending spies to these Tea Parties?
There are no Timothy McVeighs out there right now.
If they're going to issue these reports for this made-up threat.
Portraying standard, ordinary, everyday conservatives as posing a bigger threat to this country than Al-Qaeda terrorists.
Naming veterans groups as possible extremist groups.
Targeting veterans returning from war.
Speak out, get shut down. What some say the government is doing right now to silence its critics.
Now, if you disagree with that liberal path that President Obama's taking the country down, you may soon catch the attention of the Department of Homeland Security.
A new government report is warning that right-wing extremists here in the U.S.
This is a funny story. Now, this is left-wing.
I'd like to tell it.
Oh, my God. They're nuts. Janet Napolitano has gone nuts.
Really, Joe? Was she crazy?
This is funny.
For the second time in as many weeks, a crime scene reminds me of a memo which you broke on the Fox report. They were warning us for a reason, not about something political or social or anything else, except they see signs that this sort of thing is bubbling up. It was a warning to us all, and it appears now that they were right.
It absolutely does appear that they were right, and now they're scurrying, the rats are scurrying back to their holes. Michelle Malkin today. Let me remind you that back on April 14th, when this report came out from the Department of Homeland Security, Michelle Malkin made the following comments. She said, this report was one of the most embarrassingly shoddy pieces of propaganda I ever read out of Department of Homeland Security. I couldn't believe it was real. Now, this is the beautiful Michelle Malkin talking. I couldn't believe it was real. I spent the day chasing down Department of Homeland Security spokespeople who have been tied up preparing for a very important Homeland Security event later today. The First Lady coming to visit their Washington office. Priorities, you know. She goes on to say, well, the press office got back to me and verified that the document is indeed for real. This is that report that Joe was laughing about. They were very defensive, preemptively so, in asserting that it was not a politicized document and that DHS had done reports on left-wing extremism in the past. I have covered DHS for many years, and I'm quite familiar with the past assessments they and the FBI have done on animal rights terrorists and environmental terrorists, but those past reports have always been very specific in identifying the exact group. Well, Michelle, it turns out you couldn't be more wrong. And today, Michelle, yesterday actually, on her blog, comes out and says, that thing said that that report didn't say, this was anti-Semitism, this killing yesterday. And she said several times in her report yesterday, there anti-Semitism was not mentioned in the Department of Homeland Security report. She mentioned it over and over again. It was not mentioned in the DHS report. Well, I read the report today, and you know what, Michelle? It was mentioned. It was mentioned that it would be there would be anti-Semitic feelings come out and anti-Semitic violence is something we had to be on the lookout for. You're such a good reporter, Michelle. You really are. You completely missed that. I do see that she went in and corrected her mistake later on today and acknowledged that it did, in fact, state that there might be anti-Semitism raise its ugly head in that report as well. So the right wing, a bunch of rats scurrying for the hole. There isn't any quite a question about that. Let's take a listen here to Mr. Glenn Beck, whom I think is the craziest one of all, and if anybody is inciting violence, it most certainly is him.
Here's the one thing. The one thing that they're missing is the pot in America is boiling, and this is just yet another warning to all Americans of things to come. This guy is a lone gunman nut job. He wrote an article titled Hitler's Worst Mistake, He Didn't Gas the Jews. You're going to see a lot of nut jobs coming out of the woodwork now. There are two very important things that are happening here. First one, it's what I talked about 2 years ago when I talked about the perfect storm. I said that there is a storm formulating, and it's the economy, it is political correctness, it's corruption in Washington, it's the militant Islam, it's all of these things. I said, when it comes on shore, there's going to be a go, go, go mentality. And that's what this is. There is a mentality in our enemies. Our country is now vulnerable. Those people who would like to destroy us, our enemies like Al-Qaeda, they'd like to destroy us, and they will work with anyone. There are also people like white supremacists or 9/11 truthers that would also like to destroy the country. They'll work with anybody they can. In almost every shape and form in America, we need to look out for enemies, foreign and domestic. Second, there is going to be a witch hunt, I believe, in this country and quite possibly all around the world for two groups. First group, Jews. It happens every time. Second group, I think, conservatives. 2 years ago, I spoke with Benjamin Netanyahu. I told him, you are being set up. You are being set up. Israel is being set up. Iran's goal of nuclear weapons is putting Israel into the crosshairs, and here's what's going to happen. The rest of the world is going to say, oh, peace, peace, peace. They will have no choice but to do something to stop nukes from being launched into Israel. The rest of the world is going to stand by and let them do it because they're the only ones that will, because they have a right to survive. And then the whole world will turn on Israel. And they will blame Israel. Oh, the Jews stirred the pot. We were so close to peace. Anybody who has read history knows. When things go bad, the Jews become scapegoats. Jews. It's coming again, especially over in Europe. I am sorry to say. Please, can we learn from history and not make the same mistakes again? Meanwhile, the Department of Homeland Security reports about right-wing extremists. Remember that came out a few weeks ago? Left-wing and left-wing bloggers and some in the media have blamed conservative hosts like me or Bill O'Reilly for just stirring the pot. I'm not stirring the pot. I am pointing out that the pot is boiling and there is trouble in America. Since when? Have you ever heard of Don't Blame the Messenger? This is not the work of right-wing conservatives. This is the work of somebody today who is racist, crazy, or most likely both. Common sense tells you there are very hateful people on the right and the left. I'm going to show you some of them in great detail here in a second. The world will use any excuse to come after those people that they now deem unpopular. Whether you choose, and they'll do it for their own power. Whether you choose to ignore it, well, that's your prerogative. There's no longer a question of if the pot is boiling. We can all see that it is boiling. The question is, how do we pull ourselves together and defend ourselves against a common enemy?
Well, Glenn, I could tell you to start out with one thing that we could all do. You say you're not stirring the pot, that the pot is boiling. Glenn, I would tell you that you're adding wood to the fire that's helping the pot boil. You and your right-wing extremist broadcasters have been doing this all along. You have been stirring hatred. You've been promoting hatred. You have been very cleverly urging these people on to do their violence against the abortion clinics and people that they hate. We all know who they hate. We know who they hate. They hate people from the left. They hate anybody that's different than white Anglo, white guy. That's it. They hate the other. And whatever this whole thing to do had to do with, he starts talking about Europe, just changing the subject. Just changing the subject. That's what he's doing because he cannot defend. He cannot defend the hateful speech that he's been making lately on TV. I mentioned yesterday that I do wholeheartedly believe in free speech. I do. But there comes a time when somebody has to take a look and say, hey, wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute. This is over the line. And some of these creatures, Beck and Savage and Limbaugh and Hannity, have been going far, far over the line for a long, long time now. They know what they're doing. Oh, they know what they're doing. There isn't any question of that. They certainly know what they're doing, and they know they're promoting hate. For him to come on here with these phony, this phony act of his today, he knows damn well that he's turned the heat up on this pot to help the hatred move along this country. He knows he has, and he's prospered from it. And he continues to prosper from it. And so does O'Reilly, and so does Savage, and so does Mark Levin, and Hannity, and Limbaugh, and Laura Ingraham. They promote hatred every single day on their program. We have never said anything on this program other than go out and beat people at the ballot box. That's what counts. To keep our elected leaders' feet to the fire, to keep them acting out our wishes to truly represent us and to beat people at the ballot box. That's what it's all about in this country. But I will agree with Beck on one thing. We are headed for the perfect storm. I firmly believe that. And I don't believe this hate killing is going to stop anytime soon. And I only hope there's enough people in this country, vigilant people in this country, to help this stuff be snuffed out. This kind of thing cannot stand in the United States of America. It just cannot. It makes me sick what happened yesterday. Really does. I mean, there's a father working in a museum, for God's sake, in the nation's capital, in I can't imagine being in a more public area, and a guy gets out of a car and comes in and shoots you. A lunatic, to be sure. But a crazy, misguided freeper. And I hope all the people over at freerepublic.com today, if they're capable of self-examination, and I really doubt they are, having met a few of them and having been picketed by them with their signs and their outrage, their phony outrage. Probably not phony. Yeah, I ran across them in Crawford, Texas, and they were a sight to behold. Have you ever been around a crowd of them? If you have, it's not hard to understand how a nut job like this guy yesterday comes out of a group like that. And by now you've seen his writings, his rantings. About as crazy as they get. FreeRepublic.com. FreeRepublic.com. www.FreeRepublic.com. A little hard to find your way around there at first, but you'll find it. When I checked this morning, there was about 600 posts on that subject, which is quite a few, as you well know. We're expecting a call any minute from Representative Russ Carnahan, Democrat from the 3rd District of Missouri, St. Louis area. And we were going to talk about jobs and the recovery. Has it started? Do they see any evidence in Washington of it started? So far, I haven't seen any. I've seen a lot of what I would call false markers that maybe look, job loss wasn't as bad this month. It was still awful. The housing market has improved a little bit here and there, but the housing market's very regional, so it's hard to tell in the whole nation how it's really doing. I will tell you this, we're still having massive foreclosures here where I live. Still having a couple of thousand a month. It'll be interesting to see. I haven't seen last month's figures yet. But huge, huge numbers. And we'll talk a little bit more about this terrorist, domestic terrorist thing lately. I saw the map, and perhaps you have as well, about how many states have groups that are being watched that are hate groups. Let me pull up that map here if I can. Very interesting map. It's on SPL Center, SPLCenter.org. Seems to have a bit of a trouble. Okay, there we go. SPLCenter.org, intel/map. And it's got a map with all the hate groups. Somehow figured out what states had the most of them. I'm ashamed to say there are 56 of them in Florida. There's 84 in California, 23 in Ohio, 23 in Michigan, 26 in Virginia, 30 hate groups in North Carolina, 45 in South Carolina, 40 in Georgia, 36 in Alabama, 22 in Mississippi, 22 in Louisiana, 66 in Texas. Now, there are only 6 in Montana and only 7 in Idaho, but when you figure by population, that's quite a few for those states. The only state on here that shows with none is Alaska, and I'm not sure I'm buying that. I'm not sure I'm buying that at all. We do have a very active separatist group in Africa, in Alaska. I can't think of the name of it right now. Todd Palin was a member of it at one time, and I cannot remember the name of that group, and I would say they're pretty radical and worth watching, so I have a hard time thinking there are no hate groups. I think that might be... That might be the call we're expecting right now. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Russ Carnahan.
Hi, Russ. Representative Carnahan, how are you? Good to hear from you.
Wow.
Just talked to you last week at the Campaign for America's Future event, I believe it was.
We did indeed.
Yes. So we're old friends now. We've
absolutely.
It's good to have you with us.
We'll be talking to you again.
We wanted to talk to you today and find out from you how you feel about the recovery, the bailout plan, the jobs. Where are we at in this long range plan we're at right now? Do you see any improvements? And
it's a mixed bag, but I do see. I'm optimistic, I guess is the short of it. I think we have seen some success, especially with the auto industry, particularly in areas like mine in St. Louis that have been very impacted by that. With the administration and the President's Auto Task Force steering what really will be a new Chrysler and GM to come out of this healthier, leaner, able to transition to new technologies. And, of course, we passed the so-called cash for clunkers bill this week, and it's gone to the Senate, and the President said he'll sign it. But that's going to have a big incentive for people on the consumer side.
Can you explain that plan to us? A lot of people got questions
about it. Pardon
me? Can you explain that plan to us? A lot of us have questions about the cash for clunkers bill.
Well, it would provide up to $4,500 in incentives if someone trades in their vehicle for basically a new higher mileage vehicle and trading in their older low mileage vehicle. And there's I don't have the schedule in front of me because it varies, but that's the gist of what it does.
Well, how's it going to work? You're going out, you're shopping for a new car, and you've got a clunker. Let's say you got a 1983 Buick Electra 225 that you need a gas truck to follow you around with. And you're going to trade that baby in. How's this thing going to work? Are you getting a voucher immediately from the?
You can get basically up to $4,500. It goes down with certain requirements, but at the highest amount you can get is $4,500. And there are some requirements that you have to be getting, improving the overall gas mileage from a certain amount between the old one and the new one. But you meet those criteria, and almost any new car will do that. basically it's going to have, I think, a really great incentive from the consumer side, which is critical to the U.S. auto industry really getting back on its feet.
Then the incentive is going to come directly from the government directly to the auto dealer. Is that how it's going to work, or they've got that all figured out yet?
I believe it actually goes through the consumer.
Okay.
But it will, I think, really bridge the gap, provide a lot of incentive for people to go out to get these new vehicles, get cleaner vehicles on the road. It's a win-win across the board for the environment, for consumers, for the auto industry, and all the jobs that are connected to it. So that's just one example of a key sector in our economy where I think there's been a big turnaround. We've also seen in areas around the country real estate stabilizing in many areas. And with this Recovery Act being rolled out, the president has said he wants to try to speed it up even faster to get these jobs moving. But we know that's going to create jobs, and jobs that can't be outsourced, jobs, you know, right here at home, doing things like rebuilding our roads and bridges in terms of a smarter electric grid, in terms of better broadband internet, better healthcare record systems. I mean, those kind of things are going to put people to work here.
Well, we could certainly use the jobs. I live in an area. I'm talking to you from Southwest Florida right now. Florida's been hit very hard, and we're not sure we've seen the bottom of the foreclosures here yet or not. Is there going to be any kind of a moratorium on foreclosures? Is there going to be any direct help to people on the foreclosures?
You know, I really think there should be, and frankly, economically, it doesn't make a lot of sense for these banks and other lenders to be having these big inventories of foreclosed properties. They're better off to strike deals with people to keep them in their homes, write down some of these loans so they can stay in them. And I think the other thing we're seeing, certainly the value of homes across the country has gone down, but also there's people are beginning to see that there's that, some good buys in real estate out there with the market the way it is. So I think that's going to really help spur some spending and to continue to grow this economy back.
The real estate market has been very regional. I just would ask about now where I live, we've had, for the most part, the property values go down by 50%. Of course, we had a huge bubble preceding that you didn't have in your district, I'm sure, not like we had here.
In our part of the country, in St. Louis, we don't typically get the high highs or the low lows. It's been a little more stable.
How much is it going?
I would guess that our area has gone down about a fourth.
Oh, okay. Okay. And that's bad enough.
Yes, indeed.
And you had an auto plant that's being shut down in your area, right? Is that a Chrysler plant?
We did. We had a Chrysler plant that has one of the plants identified to be sold off for not staying with the new Chrysler. We do have a GM plant in St. Louis also, but it is staying open. They are closing down one shift. But we hope that can grow back. But it's really been a big impact, not just at those plants, but we have a whole network of suppliers that provide for those plants, and they probably have three times the number of people that work in those supply chains than actually in the plant. So it's a big deal.
I think a lot of people lose track of there always is a small cottage industry, if you will, that grows up around any plant like that, that makes old springs for the seats and door handles and
that's right.
They think that the automobile company makes all that stuff. They don't. And you're right, it does affect many, many more people outside the auto plant than it does inside. We do lose track of that. Well, as far as a recovery timetable here, what are we looking at? I know you don't have a crystal ball, and it's very difficult. I've often said if anybody were smart enough to figure this whole thing out, he'd probably be king of the world right now. But do you see Bernanke has mentioned that he thinks the recession is going to slow or end later on in this year. Are you that optimistic?
You know, I think if things continue like they are, I think that's certainly possible. The Recovery Act funding, you know, three-fourths of that funding was supposed to be spent in the first 18 months. And so I think that is on track. The one thing that typically, you know, we see some of these economic indicators that suggest that things are beginning to turn around. But one of the lagging indicators that lags behind typically is the job numbers. That can lag anywhere from a year and a half behind the economic numbers looking better. So we know that is the case, and so that just has to be factored into, you know, there may be economic turnaround in many sectors, but it may not be felt in those employment numbers till some months later.
As I recall, you have a pretty big presence in your district of healthcare industry, right?
You remember correctly. That's our number one employer, the healthcare industry.
I guess I know where they stand on a public option. Let me ask where you stand on a public option for healthcare right now.
I think it's important to have that as part of this debate. Just the fact that that has been discussed has gotten some of these other health insurance companies off the fence to do some things they wouldn't otherwise have done, really engage in some of these reforms that are needed in the healthcare system. So I think there's a way to do that where there is a basic healthcare coverage for anyone that may be falling through the cracks that doesn't have private coverage or doesn't have it through an employer. And there may be other fancier plans with more bells and whistles on them that certainly people could pay more for. But there ought to be, I think, a basic plan available to anyone if they can't get private coverage.
A public option?
I think it's important to have that, yes.
Okay. Earlier you had mentioned it is important to have that discussion, and I just want to know if it comes down to a vote on a public option where you're going to be on it, because I believe it is free enterprise, and those folks could probably use some competition. I know they don't want it, but they could use it.
I think that's been important to be a part of the reforms that we're talking about here.
We ask everybody that comes on the program from Washington, because we believe in complete transparency, as far as campaign donations from healthcare providers, I'm sure, probably living where you live, in the district you live, that you get campaign money from some of the healthcare providers, do you not?
I have had been supported in my campaigns from probably people across the healthcare spectrum, from people that are working in healthcare, to labor unions that are organized around healthcare, to nursing, hospital, doctor organizations, just because I interact with them a lot on healthcare issues.
Okay. Well, we always like to know where people stand, and you know why we ask that. Politics being what it is, a lot of people claim that Washington's bought and paid for. I don't think it is in all cases, but I do think the medical or the healthcare industry's had a tremendous impact on Washington, and I think it's probably the reason we've gone for, what, maybe 16 years since Hillary Clinton tried to get something through and gotten not much done.
It's true. Well, one of the things that's changed dramatically since Hillary tried to do the healthcare reforms in the 90s is that a lot of those large business groups that were just very much against healthcare reform have come around because they see this as a competitiveness issue. You know, in a global economy, if we're competing against companies that are in countries that have healthcare systems that are better than ours, that puts us at a competitive disadvantage. And I think many businesses have come to that realization. On top of, the tremendous cost strain, it just really needs to be done. So I think there's a very different dynamic going on now than in the 90s.
And no one's learned that lesson any more than the auto industry, I think. They've certainly
no question.
paid the price for that, and we're all paying the price for it. Well, Representative Carnahan, I want to thank you so much for being on the Guy James Show today. We certainly appreciate hearing your views and your outlook for how things are going to go. Keep in there, and please keep up the good fight for a public health care plan. I will tell you that me and my listeners, anyway, are all for it and have bombarded Washington with phone calls and emails, and we'll continue to do so. And good luck on getting something done, and I know you will work at it. I enjoyed meeting you in Washington last week, and I thank you very much for being on the program.
It's great to be with you, and keep it stirred up out there. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We will do our part. Thanks very much.
All right. Take Bye. Care.
Representative Russ Carnahan from the 3rd District of Missouri. We had that discussion last week. Is it Missouri or Missouri? It's always been Missouri to me. Depends where you live. And he takes in St. Louis, and they've gotten hit hard. Their GM plant is not closed down, but the Chrysler plant is going to be sold off and closed down. I have a car that was made. I have a Chrysler product and was made in St. Louis when they had an affiliation with Mitsubishi at the same time. My car's a Chrysler product that has a Mitsubishi engine in it and a lot of Mitsubishi parts in it. And I love the car. It's a great car. It's old. 8 years old, but perfect condition, I might say. Anyway, I too late. Bedtime for Bonzo to ask if there's any real chance of campaign finance reform. Let me answer that question for the representative. No, there'll never be any real. Any realistic campaign finance. These guys are going to get money wherever they can get it, as much as they can get. What do I know? Maybe someday we'll straighten that mess out. I don't know. I certainly hope so. Oh, my God. The money in politics. Yeesh. As you know, I have a particular thing about that. I wouldn't allow them to get any money. We'd make the TV stations and the radio stations and the newspaper all give them some ink and some airtime, and that's it, you know? That ought to be enough. Well, hey, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour here on the Guy James Show, part of the Head On Radio Network. And we will be back right after the news, so don't you dare go away. We'll be here. We expect you to be here, too.
Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Workers at a plant that makes Army backpacks and vests turned out in force on Tuesday to protest plans by parent company Alliant Tech Systems to close the New Bedford, Massachusetts plant, essentially cutting 350 jobs. The company will be moving many of those jobs to Puerto Rico. The protest was organized by Workers United, SCIU, a union that has been seeking to organize the workers. Congressional representatives in the region sent a joint letter to the Army seeking to make renewal of any contract contingent on preservation of work at the plant. The letter was signed by Representative Barney Frank and Senators Edward Kennedy and John Kerry. Meanwhile, the New Bedford City Council passed a resolution on Monday that promises to help find a buyer for the plant if Alliant does close the location and move the jobs. Advocates of a bill that would help bullied students in New York schools are concerned that the shift in power of the state legislature could put the act in jeopardy. Lee Cutler is with the New York United Teachers and says the legislation is necessary in this new age of bullying.
It may be in the 50s and 60s and 70s you used to get prank phone calls, but now with everybody on the internet and with cell phones and things like that, the harassment can continue, you know, 24 hours a day.
A new coalition of business leaders is seeking to show their support for the Employee Free Choice Act.
The organization is called the Business Leaders for a Fair Economy and is made up of more than 1,000 business leaders of both large and small companies. The chair of the organization is Roger Smith, who is also president and CEO of American Income Life Insurance. In a statement on the organization's website, faireconominow.org, Smith says, "In these tough economic times, we need solutions that protect workers and support long-term growth and sustainability for American businesses." One of the biggest concerns for Employee Free Choice Act supporters regarding Senator Arnold Specter's defection to the Democratic side of the aisle is his proclaimed unwillingness to support the legislation. However, in a speech given by the senator this weekend, he said he is working with labor leaders to find middle ground he can support. And he said having labor support is important for his political career.
I understand your job's on the line, and I understand
that my job's on the line.
I understand that, and I believe that you'll be satisfied with my vote on this issue. And if you're not, I recognize your right in a free society to cast your vote as you choose.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes, Guy James back with you. And I'm chuckling right now. I am chuckling. I really am. I just had a good laugh during that break. I hope you all feel as happy as I do right now. I got an email. I pulled off and printed an email from Rush Limbaugh during, well, not actually Rush Limbaugh, but one of his number one disciples. You talk about talking points. I could have written this letter right off the Rush Limbaugh website. This reflects the thinking of the right. You know what I told you. You know my opinion of how they think and their intelligence. Hi, Guy. This president is really mucking things up. You complained about the deficit when Bush, Cheney, and the Republican Congress was doing it well, as was I. But now that it's your side busting the budget with huge deficits never before seen, it is suddenly okay. And now he has sounded the clarion call for raising taxes, ergo paygo. I don't know. My taxes haven't gone up yet. Has yours? Has anybody's taxes gone up? Smokers, okay. His policies, as did FDR's, are prolonging the recession. And a little bit more, that revisionist history that the right suddenly came up with last year. Prolonging the recession, as did FDR's. Oh, my God. Straight out of the drug junkie. What's his name? The child molester drug giant, Limbaugh. Obama's plan was supposed to save or create jobs and stop unemployment rising above 8%. Last I looked, the unemployment rate was well above 9%, and if you calculate it the way they used to, the real rate is over 20%. Yeah, this guy's plan is working out well. Let's see, Mike, how long has this president been in office? How long? Took 8 years to drive this country into the ground, and you think everything, you know, the birds should be tweeting and the flowers have been coming out and the sun shining and everything's perfect. Two chickens in every pot and two cars in every garage. Everybody's just doing fine. You think You could turn it's like trying to turn the Titanic around in a quarter of a mile. Can't be done. Can't be done. Wants to have the government take over the economy. Yeah. The Obama administration has taken over the banking industry. Let me see. When did that start? And I don't recall really seeing them having taken it over. Auto manufacturing now is attempting to take over health care. Give me a break. Uh-huh. He can't even make a speech to his brethren. Here we go. Are you talking about the hatred? Here we go. There's always got to be the hatred in there. He can't even make a speech to his brethren in the Muslim world that they like. It seemed to me they sure liked that speech he gave last week one hell of a lot. Sure, the left in the U.S. loved the speech, but outside the libs in this country, no one else seemed to even notice. Well, Mike, I think you got your head up your ass. You don't know what you're talking about, because from overseas, all I've heard is congrats and good wishes on that speech. They loved it. You must not, well, I know, of course, Mike, when you write a letter like this, it's apparent to me that you don't see any news outside of hardcore right-wing news, because these are talking points straight from Hannity and Limbaugh and those people. That's what you call good old shuck and jive, he says. Obama says our government is not interested in running government motors yet. He turns around, fires the CEO, hires a new one, and installs a new board. Well, yeah, I'd say when the train keeps running off the tracks, you usually get a new engineer. That's the way it goes, I would say. Say one thing in public and try and take it over while everyone is listening to the words and not watching what he's doing. Well, we're all watching, and we'll do what we politically can to stop this BS. Well, good luck with that. Is that typical? Could you not talk to 100 of your right-wing, hardcore right-wing conservative Limbaugh marching lemmings and not come up with this exact letter? I'm not so sure it isn't a form letter. It just might be. I don't know, because every letter I get from a right-winger is exactly like this. It's exactly like this. They started it the day after the inauguration. Why the hell hasn't that Obama done anything yet? Thanks for the laugh, Mike. Really appreciate it. It really is. I don't know. Oh, my. Don't get me wrong. I certainly don't agree with everything that President Obama has done. I never have. I never will. I've always said the only person I agree with 100% on political matters is me. So, yes, I am unhappy with some things he's done. And by and large, I am happy with what he has done. And most of all, I am glad that once again that we can look foreigners in the eye and be proud. We don't have to hang our heads in shame like we used to. That's a fact, and I can tell you that as someone that lives in an area where many, many, many foreigners come to and visit, and when they bring up Obama's name, they smile. They swore at Bush every time they got a chance. So, you know, that means a little something to me that our country is respected once again. I know it doesn't mean anything to the hardcore conservatives. We don't give a damn what anybody else thinks about this country. All we care is what we think. Yeah, well, it's a small world now, and we do have to get along. And I love that letter, though. I do. I love that letter. I love it. We are going to, right now, let me see here. What did I do with that? Here it is. I told you that, okay, I'm gonna dial a number here. I don't think you'll hear this. Do you hear that? Let's see what we've got here. Hello, this is Professor McCoy.
Yes, it is.
This is Guy James from The Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us on the program today. We appreciate
Thank you,
it very
sir.
Much. I've looked forward to talking to you for, a week or more, I suppose, maybe earlier in the week. You've authored some interesting books, some fascinating books, and have talked a lot about the CIA and had had your problems with the CIA, I understand.
Way back when, yes, indeed.
Pardon me?
Yes, indeed. Number of years ago.
Number of years ago. Tell us a little bit about your background, if you will.
I'm a history professor at University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I specialize in Southeast Asia. This has been an area since the end of World War II through the Vietnam War, indeed right up to the present, where the United States has had a constant presence, where the CIA has been particularly active. And this then creates all kinds of opportunities to look into the nature of CIA-covered operations. My first book, Politics of Heroin, explored CIA relationships with drug lords in the so-called Golden Triangle region of Southeast Asia and looked at the way that the agency, in effect, sacrificed the drug war to fight the Cold War using Highland warlords to mobilize guerrillas to fight communist influence on the southern border of communist China. And those warlords took advantage of CIA protection to expand the production and trafficking of opium and heroin, including trafficking to American forces fighting in South Vietnam. So by the end of the Vietnam War, the last year that we had full combat forces in Vietnam, according to a White House survey, one-third, 34% of all U.S. combat forces in South Vietnam were heroin addicts. So it had a real impact upon the good order and discipline of the U.S. Army in the latter stages of the Vietnam War. And more recently, I've turned to studying CIA role in the research and development and propagation of a novel form of torture, psychological torture. And that's the subject of my recent post this week on a website called Tom Dispatch, which is now up also at Huffington Post and Salon.com.
Well, it's a very timely article because of where we're at now and what we've been discussing lately. This torture issue isn't something that popped up just at the start of the Iraq War, is it?
No. What happened is right back in the darkest days of the Cold War, the CIA became convinced because of the nature of testimony in communist show trials in Eastern Europe, in Hungary and Romania, that the Soviet Union, through things like the Pavlov Institute, may have cracked the code of human consciousness. Back in the early 1950s, we knew very little about the operations of the human mind. It was a mystery to us. And there was this enormous fear that the CIA would be facing all kinds of Soviet agents who had been programmed. Perhaps our own agents would be captured and reprogrammed into double agents. Lest we forget, the Cold War was, in fact, a war of ideas. And so the CIA decided to counter what they believed to be the Soviet Union's advances in this realm of cognitive warfare by developing aggressive techniques of interrogation. And they started off using electroshock, hypnosis, drugs like LSD and mescaline. None of these worked, but what did work was they outsourced a tremendous amount of research to the leading cognitive researchers in Canada, the United States, the United Kingdom, and they discovered two key techniques that became the foundation for a new kind of torture, psychological torture. The first of these was the discovery by a very famous Canadian psychologist named Donald Hebb of something called sensory deprivation, that if you simply take, in his case, student volunteers, put them in goggles, gloves, and earmuffs. You induce within a few hours hallucinations as strong as mescaline or LSD. Within 48 hours, you'll get a complete breakdown akin to psychosis. And if you actually look at the photographs of Guantanamo detainees, they look just like Donald Hebb's medical students at McGill University back in the 1950s. The other technique they discovered was that the Soviet KGB's most lethal torture technique was not, beatings. It was actually simply making the victim to stand immobile for hours at a time while the legs swelled, separating lesions erupted, hallucinations began, the kidney shut down. We call this today stress positions. And the CIA took these two techniques, sensory deprivation and stress positions, and they put them in something called the Kubark Counterintelligence Interrogation Manual, which they wrote in 1963. And that became the foundational document for many of the techniques which we've seen at Abu Ghraib and which are now considered by the international community to be torture.
Well, here we are once again involved in this. Seems like they've taken that manual, the Kubark manual, and are they still using the Kubark manual?
They're using exactly those same techniques. You may recall last month President Obama aroused enormous controversy by releasing those famous Justice Department interrogation or torture memos,
yes.
Those four memos, and there was much coverage of the techniques described in them. Many of the techniques involved exactly those two techniques in the Kubark manual. They described two phases of CIA interrogation today. One they call conditioning, in which exactly that when the detainee is being transported to a CIA black site, he will put in goggles, gloves, and earmuffs to induce sensory disorientation. He'll be subject to all kinds of additional sensory techniques, temporal modification, manipulation of time. Basically, what they're doing there is they're attacking six sensory pathways to the brain. And then beyond that, they've supplemented or strengthened that with coercive techniques, that wall slamming and slapping, which are somewhat more recent developments. And then, of course, the other thing they've used now is waterboarding, which is actually, although it's a modern psychological technique, it goes all the way back to the 16th century. You can find actually a wood etching of that in the 1541 interrogation manual of the French Inquisition. And there's a graphic representation of waterboarding that looks exactly like contemporary CIA waterboarding, and they labeled that technique in that 1541 etching as torturae gallicae ordinariae, standard French torture. So back in the medieval period when they knew torture, what it was and what it wasn't, they call that torture.
We haven't progressed very far. One of my listeners wants me to ask you whether the physical or psychological methods cause greater long-term harm.
Actually, that's a very interesting and very timely question. In much of the debate around psychological torture in the United States, this has been branded in the public discourse as torture light, and the President Bush has come up with similar euphemisms to describe it during his time in power. The CIA program, he called it. And we kind of dismiss psychological torture as not really torture. But there's actually been serious research done, which has been reported recently in psychological journals, the Archives of Psychiatry, by a Turkish researcher who did serious interviews with 279 victims of torture in Bosnia and found that physical and psychological abuse induced equal amounts of stress. So psychological torture is, according to this research, of equal gravity. Moreover, America's oldest center for the treatment of torture victims, the Center for Torture Victims in Minneapolis, its director there, Mr. Johnson, Doug Johnson, considers actual victims of psychological torture much more difficult to treat, that the trauma of psychological torture is longer lasting. Now, what the Bush administration did was that they came up with various legalisms to basically exempt psychological torture from the ban on torture under the UN Convention. And this dated right back to the ratification of the convention back in 1994. And so, in effect, under U.S. law, because of the way we ratified the convention, along with what are called diplomatic reservations, we exempted psychological torture from the writ of U.S. law. So we've continued to engage in psychological torture, which the rest of the world considers torture, which remains quasi-legal under U.S. law. So we've got a real problem with this.
Yeah, we actually specifically made an exemption for that, right?
Yes, exactly. That's under section, it's first of all under four diplomatic reservations, to our ratification of the UN Convention. So you say, like, I ratify the convention, but, and those four buts basically redefined and limited psychological torture to death threats, threats against another, extreme physical harm, or the injection of drugs. Okay? Well, the two techniques we've been talking about, sensory disorientation and stress positions, and many other techniques, there are about 40 psychological torture techniques that have been defined by researchers, that all 40 of those techniques are exempt under U.S. law. Because only those four things, the drugs, the threats against another, the physical pain, are deemed to be under those reservations, deemed to be psychological torture. Everything else isn't. It's a bizarre reservation that was then written into U.S. federal law in 1994 under something called Section 2340 of the U.S. Federal Code, and was reiterated in the Military Commissions Act 2006, which the Bush administration under Vice President Cheney wrote to grant themselves an effective immunity from any prosecution for all of their ordering and practice of torture.
Well, and the citizenry basically thought we had signed this U.N. Convention Against Torture, and probably the average citizen had no idea that we had made this exception, correct?
Yeah, and I also think that the Clinton administration, which presided over the ratification, didn't know what they were doing, because when they sent those reservations to Congress, they basically dusted off reservations that had been written 6 years before by the conservative Reagan administration. Reagan didn't send the convention to Congress, but the reservations were simply sitting in the file. So when the Clinton era Justice Department sent the convention to Congress, they sent it along with these very conservative, exculpatory reservations that had been written by the Reagan administration, which of course is ideologically polar opposite from where Clinton stood on these kinds of issues. So I think it was in a certain sense almost a bungled ratification by the Clinton administration that we're living with today. And so that when we practice these techniques, the Bush administration lawyers can say, this is not torture technically under U.S. law. When the rest of the world looks at what we're doing, they know it's torture because the rest of the world has fully signed on with the U.N. Convention, has prohibited both physical and psychological torture.
And then we have
the thing is that even under this modified ratification, even under these exculpatory U.S. laws, waterboarding still could be, I think, by any reasonable court, considered to be torture. Because one of the things that we still say is psychological torture is a threat of death. And waterboarding is actually something that does induce an overwhelming fear of death in every human being. And very few people understand this because of something that we all have, every human being has hardwired into their brain, something called the mammalian diving reflex. This is a reflex that we share literally with seals. For example, if you're driving in a car and you've got a child in the back of the car and you go, during winter, you go into water and you sink beneath water, a child can actually survive for up to 20 minutes of complete drowning in cold water and emerge not only alive, but without any brain damage whatsoever. Because of this human reflex, we're hardwired to call the mammalian diving reflex. And if you put cold water in small amounts and constrict breathing, as waterboarding does, the brain triggers the mammalian diving reflex. Okay, that we all have in our brain, and you're absolutely convinced you're dying. The brain says, death, death, death. And that's why it is so completely and utterly terrifying. And we did that in 1 month, I think, what was it, over 180 times to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in a single month. You know, well, under U.S. law, threats of death are psychological torture. So, you know, I think that even under this expanded exculpatory legislation, that Bush administration officials could be held responsible, could be convicted of authorizing torture, even under U.S. law and certainly under international jurisdiction.
Well, the question has to be asked with Zubaydah 83 times and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed 183 times. The question has to be asked, weren't both of those past getting any information from them? Isn't there some kind of a human, some sort of a human affinity for this torture that they, the people administering it were enjoying it or something?
Well, this is one of those gray areas that we don't really understand what we're doing by torture. The historical evidence indicates that the perpetrators and the powerful who command them derive an almost kind of psychic sense of empowerment. And I think this is manifest by two phenomena, that once you order small torture, even a torture of a few top Soviet spies, a few top Al-Qaeda terrorists, the torture starts to spread uncontrollably in two directions. First, from these targeted few to the torture of the many. So the Bush administration ordered torture of a few top Al-Qaeda captives, and before you knew it, it was proliferating in Bagram, and it was being done on at least five special operation forces bases across Iraq. So it got right out of control, and we saw the manifestations of that in those photos from Abu Ghraib. The second way that it spreads is that in individual cases of torture, you start off with maybe this scientific controlled torture, and then it escalates out of control into 183 instances of waterboarding in a single month against another human being, which, regardless of who or what colored Sheikh Mohammed might be, he's a human being, and treating him as such is an act of sadism. There's just no other word for it. Now, that man did not have information that justified that in any way, and it was, I would say, if we had the videotapes of those interrogations and they've been destroyed, there are 90 videotapes have been destroyed. If we were able to watch those and you had clinical specialists, I think they would see clear signs of a kind of collective eroticism of the sadistic thrill of the torture experience.
Oh, my. We're talking to Professor Alfred McCoy from the University of Wisconsin, prolific author. He's written a book, The Politics of Heroin, CIA Complicity in the Global Drug Trade, A Question of Torture. He knows a lot about the history of, obviously, about the history of torture in this country. I participated in a study while I was in college, and only learned the name of the study just a few years ago, whereby they do an experiment to find out who they can control and who they can't to get to do these sorts of things. I can't think of the name of the study, where they put you in a room and give you orders to shock somebody.
Where did you go to college?
Pardon, at Ohio State University.
Oh, okay.
We did that back in 1963, and you were put in a room, and it was to see if they could get you to follow orders, and no matter how extreme. And the name escapes me now. But, of course, they found out that they could get any number of people to do anything. And it seems it's that way with our military personnel or the people in the CIA doing this. They can always find somebody who will do these horrendous acts. That's true, isn't it?
There was an experiment done at Yale University by a psychologist named Stanley Milgram, and he basically advertised in the newspaper that ordinary citizens come in, and they were in a simulated electroshock situation, and the person would give orders, and the dial would go up on a fake electrical shock machine, and then when it got to a maximum level, the actor who was playing the victim, the screams would escalate to kind of blood-curdling level and then stop as if the person had died. And they found that under the right circumstances, they could get nearly 100% of those ordinary citizens to follow orders and to participate in some way in the torture of another human being. And that's why there's no such thing as a little bit of torture. Because once you let it into the military system, as we did under President Bush, because I believe of that seductive, almost erotic appeal of torture, That combined with the military and the ordinary human reflex of being obedient means that, first of all, it will spread, and it will spread right out of control. And once it starts, it proliferates to the torture of the many and to these acts of barbarism, the likes of which produced that great scandal at Abu Ghraib and other scandals elsewhere in those photographs that President Obama has decided that he will not release. And in the modern age, there is nothing that a state can do. There is no other act that a state can engage in that will discredit, that will delegitimate it in the eyes of the world. And for the world's moral leader, that's us, the United States, to break the world's moral code produces enormous problems, contradictions, and complexities that it is going to take us years to get beyond.
Well, the trust we build up with the rest of the world is gone. The idea that we were these this good nation here, lily white, not doing much wrong, is gone. And like you say, it's going to take years. And by the way, yes, it was the Milgram experiment, and we did do it. I did participate with my best friend in college. I after giving the guy several shocks where it didn't hurt him too much, after he let out a good yell once, I quit and told him I wouldn't do it anymore. And the guy came in and said, you got to do what we tell you. And I said, I won't. And I left. And my good friend Larry went through with it all the way to the end till the guy was silent. So I guess I'm happy that I didn't go all the way with it.
So Larry is now a retired lieutenant general from the U.S. Army, and you're running a radio show being critical of U.S. foreign policy, right?
Well, he was in the military a long time, I will say that. He didn't make it to lieutenant general. He made it to colonel, that's all he made.
Well, that's pretty good. That'll do.
That's a pretty good guess right there. My goodness. Well, where do you think we'll get anywhere with this? I mean, I am in favor of following this as far as we can and taking it to the limit. I think we have to recapture our national pride and the trust that we had with a lot of people around the world. Do you think there's any chance that we're going to take this to its conclusion?
There are two things, there are two issues at stake. First of all, the past, and second, the future. On the past, do we in some way investigate or possibly punish, either by criticism or by formal legal sanction, those who wrote the torture memos, those who gave the orders for torture, beyond the supposed bad apples, the higher officials in the Bush administration, particularly the Justice Department lawyers? Do we in some way sanction them? Do we have a formal inquiry? Or do we simply let them get away with it? Well, in nations around the world, whether Indonesia or Argentina, there's an enormous inclination to allow those who occupied enormously high offices in the national security establishment to get away with torture once they leave office. This is a process, a political process, known internationally as impunity. And right now we're seeing the back and forth with Dick Cheney claiming that there are memos that will exonerate, that will show that there were high gains from these methods. This is Cheney and his followers fighting for impunity, just like Argentinian military did after the junta fell from power. So one question faces society: are we going to have some kind of formal inquiry? Now, if we don't do something, it's very likely that under universal jurisdiction, the Germans or the Spanish or the Belgians will, at some future point, indict one of our officials. And that will result, I think, in a diplomatic incident of a major nature and enormous discredit to the United States. So this is not something we have the luxury of just simply walking away from. It's not simply our own sovereign law. Okay, so that's one issue. Are we going to have some kind of inquiry? That will look like a credible quasi-judicial inquiry to resolve this at an international level. My own feeling is we have to do something, either indictment and trial or formal judicial inquiry. Second issue is, what are we going to do on these issues of interrogation in the future? Now, This is enormously troubling. When our current CIA director, Leon Panetta, came before Congress for his confirmation, he said that the CIA should and would in future engage in what's called rendition. That's to say, when we capture a suspected terrorist, instead of bringing them to Guantanamo, we are to a U.S. Facility, we'd ship them to a third country for incarceration and interrogation. And then, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, he said, of course, we would use our full diplomatic authority to make sure that they were treated humanely. The reason you ship somebody to a third country for interrogation is because you know that in Morocco or Egypt or Syria or Uzbekistan, they practice really brutal, torturous interrogation. That's why you ship them there. So, I mean, that's a transparent violation of the UN Convention. Extraordinary rendition. Shipping detainees to third countries for abuse is a violation under the convention. And the CIA director stood up and said we're basically going to violate the UN Convention. Okay? Now, that's something we did during the long years of the Cold War. During those decades from the 1950s through the 1990s, when we were propagating torture and training our allies to do it, we didn't actually do it ourselves. We didn't run our own prisons. The CIA only opened those 8 black sites under President Bush, and they've now been closed. And it looks like it's back to the future. It looks like we're going back to that same policy that we did during the Cold War, where it was Savak or the South Vietnamese or the Hondurans or El Salvadorians that were doing it, or the Guatemalans who were doing it at our behest. And I think that now, because of Abu Ghraib, we simply can't afford to do that, because if some new prison, some new iconic black site, some new tiger cages of South Vietnam or Savak prison in Tehran or some new Bagram or Abu Ghraib emerges in the future, the world will lay the blame on us. And so I think practicing rendition and doing kind of outsourcing torture or secondhand torture, that's not going to wash in the modern world. It represents enormous risk to the United States.
Well, I certainly hope that justice is done in this case. I've certainly been for that all along. If I don't care who you are, if you do this sort of thing, you should suffer the consequences. It doesn't matter if you're the president of the United States. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're the vice president. You should be facing justice if you've committed these crimes. Your book, the latest one, is A Question of Torture?
Yes, it is.
And
it reviews a number of these issues as well.
It's available everywhere?
Everywhere, but let's see. The best place to get it probably is Amazon.com, where it's sold for, I think, it's about $10. It's and ships in 24 hours.
A Question of Torture by Professor Alfred W. McCoy. Will tell you everything you need to know about this subject after years and years of experience and analysis of this situation. I can't imagine anybody bringing a better insight to this whole problem than you have. Professor, I want to thank you very much for being with us on the program today. I reserve the right to get back with you again some of these days. We didn't have nearly long enough to talk about this very complex issue, and it is germane to part of the problem we've got going on in this country right now. Professor McCoy, thank you very much. It's been a great talking to you. Our listeners have enjoyed it, and you have our thanks.
Thank you very much, sir. Bye-bye now.
Bye now. Fascinating book, A Question of Torture. This is an issue that I hope does not go away. I hope it never goes away. Until those responsible, whoever they may be, would matter to me if it's the Pope, if it's Bush, if it's Cheney, if it's any of that whole cabal that was involved in that, they have disgraced the United States of America. They have disgraced this country. And if they have broken the law, they need to be brought to justice. I don't want to hear any excuses. No excuses matter. You and I can't go before a judge and say, well, you know I broke the law, but, you know, I'm somebody. That doesn't matter to me. And it doesn't matter to most Americans. And I think if all these ugly secrets are brought out of the dark, and we're about to see some more of the memos that were redacted, but and now they're making them public. If we shed light on all these documents and we see that this took place in our names, then I say that we should prosecute these people to the fullest extent of the law. We're going to take a very, very brief break, and we're going to be back with Brian Fedrick from Media Matters. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a very short amount of time, whatever that is. How do I say that? Real quick. This is Guy James from the Guy James Show. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Guy. Good to be here.
Good. Always great to have somebody from Media Matters on the program. I'm real proud of the work you folks do, and I always let Ben know every time I talk to him. And we got to meet up with some of the folks at the Campaign for America Future soiree last week. Were you there?
Oh, good. No, actually, I was one of the few that had to stay here.
Somebody
plug away. Somebody's got to man these TVs and radios all the time.
You do a great job of manning that. What do you have, people all day, every day, radio, TV, monitoring? You must.
That's certainly what we shoot for. We have a staff of about 25 researchers, 5 editors, And then a whole communication side. But, yeah, we try and keep our eye on the TV and the radio all day. We have people here at 5 a.m. and people that stay till sometimes 1 or 2. So
just this very moment as we're talking, I got the Media Matters Minute Radio segment come in from Ben Fischel.
Good.
We get it every day, and we play it every day. And we appreciate the work you do.
We appreciate the work you do. It's nice to be talking to somebody who's not ramping up the crazed right-wing rhetoric right now.
Well, there's a little bit of that going on.
Certainly is.
And I saw via your site today that Mr. The Drug Junkie said that this guy that went out and shot the guard at the Holocaust Museum yesterday was obviously a leftist.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard the crazy Glenn Beck talk about it. We haven't heard Hannity talk about it yet. He didn't talk about it at all on his program yesterday. They're going off the deep end, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, they're really having to spin this hard to make it into a problem of the left, because it's so clearly something that even some conservatives are as Shep Smith said last night, that the folks that are sending him email, that the rhetoric has become really disturbing and frightening, and he's seen something that he's never seen before, and that he thinks that the folks that put together the DHS report on right-wing extremism were onto something, and, you know, that's something that we've pointed out since the beginning, that the report on right-wing extremism that came out was attacked for being, just some sort of a political a political tool against the right wing, and while it admittedly had, you know, its problems, its point was just to point out that these, you know, these right wing extreme groups use, you know, this rhetoric against Obama, you know, being the first black president. You know, they use this rhetoric to recruit new members, and that this leads ultimately to an atmosphere where you have lone gunmen that go in and shoot up a museum. And it's, you know, it's frightening that this sort of right-wing vigilantism is really is kicking into high gear here.
It is. I should mention that, Brian, you're the editor at...
I'm the deputy editorial director.
Editorial. You've got quite a educational background. Well, you started out at Iowa, got your bachelor's at Iowa, then you went to North Carolina, and what was it, University of Colorado, you got your doctorate?
Yep, ended up in Boulder there studying communication, so got a PhD in communication, but really I just like the school a lot, I think.
Professional student.
That's right.
Nothing else you can do now, you got your PhD.
That's right.
First of all, Shep Smith, this is the second time lately that I've heard him go against the grain on Fox. He's got to be walking on thin ice over there.
Yeah, well, you know, there certainly is a movement there's a post today on the blog Atlas Shrugs. You know, a lot of these conservatives are obsessed with Ayn Rand. There was a post today called Please Shepard Smith Out the Door. And it was just a rant about how Shep's rhetoric has become intolerable on Fox, and they need to get rid of him. So, yeah, I don't think conservatives are taking too kindly to his change of heart on some of these issues. Although, you know, I think and Shep Smith has certainly had his issues over the years. He's also been somewhat of a voice of sanity over there on Fox in some instances. So. It's nice to see that he recognizes this as, you know, a problem on the right and not as a problem on the left, as someone like Rush Limbaugh would claim.
Maybe he's the part that they include in their slogan. Maybe he's the they can about the balance deal there.
That's about all they got.
I was shocked when I saw that the video, by the way, or the audio, by the way, is up on the Media Matters site of the things that Limbaugh said. And I hate to give him too much airtime, but you know, to say that this guy's an obvious leftist, he's a freeper, for God's sake. I told people. My audience today, I've been picketed by freepers. I was out in Crawford, Texas one time covering the Cindy Sheehan thing going on there, and the freepers came and picketed me. There were no leftists in the group, I can guarantee you. What an ignorant thing for Limbaugh to say.
Yeah, I sure hope I can stay off their radar because those guys, they sure are crazy. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's... Like I said, it's just they're really trying hard to spin this, and it's painfully obvious that it's just spin.
Well, it is, and I don't know how far they're going to try and carry this out.
Well, you know, and my colleague Eric Bullard, who is one of our senior fellows and writes, particularly about these issues. He said in a column in the last couple of days that, you know, the right-wing noise machine really needs to figure out a new way to address this issue because nobody's buying it, and B, the atmosphere is just going to create more and more of these incidences, and, you know, they're going to be called upon to explain themselves and, you know, explain their rhetoric more often. And, you know, you saw that with the murder of George Tiller, and, you know, their attempts to make it seem as though they played no part in fanning the flames, especially Bill O'Reilly, claiming he played no part in fanning the flames that led, you know, some deranged wacko to murder a doctor who was providing health care services to women.
And the bad thing is, once they let these dogs out for attack, you can't call them back.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, the sad things is that you have this mainstreaming of this rhetoric that you never saw before. You know, even during the 90s, under Clinton, this stuff was on the fringe, and it was in the fringe media. Now, on Fox News, you know, you have it on a regular basis, especially on shows like Glenn Beck's and Sean Hannity's show, where they're preaching this sort of, this extreme, you know, Obama's a Muslim, Obama's a socialist, Obama's gonna take away your guns. We've taken to calling it Obama derangement syndrome. Just this paranoia that they have that Obama is somehow gonna. And what that does is ultimately give these people, these individual lone gunmen, the feeling that not only are their rights in danger, but they must be compelled to act, and that if they do, they will be helping to save their country. And, you know, Fox is selling this and showing it on a daily basis because it makes a buck in advertising, and it's really disturbing.
Do you think, and I think I know what the answer is, I know what I think about it, do you think that some of these people like, well, Beck, I don't want to count him, he's nuts. I mean, there's something wrong with him. Do you think Hannity, who else?
Whether they believe the rhetoric that they're speaking.
And Hannity and a Savage, are they actors or?
You know, it's a good question. It's a good question. I have my own personal feelings. I think that I think Bill O'Reilly recognizes it as a shtick and knows where his. And knows where his audience is and knows how to make a buck. But, you know, Sean Hannity really seems, I think, he seems to be pretty relentless. And I think some of the guys, it's a willful ignorance. It's a desire not to explore the other side of the issue or challenge their beliefs. They would rather, you know, just continue on the sort of right-wing line of thinking that they're on. And so, you know, that's I think what happens more often than not. I think Glenn Beck clearly recognizes that this is something he can make money off of, and you know, he's a comedian, a stand-up comedian, and you know, he thinks that he's onto something here, and so he gets more and more outrageous with every shtick.
Yeah, he's gone the way of Morton Downey Jr. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that, but
no, I am. I remember those shows well. It was that was really what started I think a lot of that atmosphere. Rush Limbaugh came shortly after him. There's a great clip on the web sometime you ought to check out of Rush Limbaugh's one of his first TV shows in New York, and he went out into the audience, and this shows you why Rush Limbaugh is now just entirely behind the mic on the radio, doesn't interact with the public at all, short of having some heavily screened calls. Anyway, Rush Limbaugh goes out into the audience, and they're having a debate about, I want to say it's abortion, and Rush is ranting about how women, you know, don't really have the right to choose, essentially, and the audience turns on him. And you have people screaming at each other in the crowd, and Rush is trying to gain control, but they keep screaming and keep screaming, and ultimately after 10 minutes of this, they cut back to a shot of Rush in the studio, and it's empty, and they've cleared the entire audience out, and he's just obviously humbled and has to say, you know, I wanted to make my final point, but I can't, so here I am. And when these ideas are, you know, placed in the mainstream or placed in situations where people can debate them and have a free exchange of ideas, it's not, you know, the people's good nature. I think people in general, you know, it's this myth of the U.S. as a conservative society. People's true, you know, hearts sort of get through all this, and it becomes just the sort of media drivel that it is.
Well, drivel is the right word. Ryan, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it. And we really appreciate all that Media Matters does. You guys have come a long way in a short time. And there's some people that just hate you.
We certainly get our fair share of hateful emails, too. But no, we appreciate the work that you do. And it's really nice to have somebody out there that just speaks the truth rather than conservative or liberal for that matter talking points. I mean, if we can have a reasoned debate without the sort of propaganda and falsehoods, I think our country would be much better off. So thanks to you as well.
Well, and that's what you guys do, is force the truth. You force it out, and whether people like it or not, and that's a great thing. Brian Frederick, associate editor, if I got that right?
It's a guy who stays too late and gets up too early.
At Media Matters, and I don't have to tell any of my audience where Media Matters is, believe me.
Hey, Brian, guy, anytime. Good talking to you.
Thanks so much.
All right.
What a great guy. What a great organization. Media Matters is very valuable to all of us on the left. If you want to find out the truth, and it's no wonder they're hated by people on the right, because, it's just like Michelle Malkin made that bogus claim that anti-Semitism wasn't mentioned in that Department of Homeland Security memo that came out a few months ago. Well, who was it that jumped up and said, "Whoa, wait a minute"? It was Media Matters, and there's nothing, there's nothing that these people can do to escape. They hang on every word from Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck and all. They catch every lie they tell. Like, that's why I said they just force the truth out of people, and that's a good thing. We naturally tell the truth on this show. We don't have to have anybody force it out of us, but you know those right-wingers, they need a little help getting the truth out once in a while. Hey, I do want to thank you. I've enjoyed this show today. I've enjoyed this whole week, I think, more than any week that I've had doing talk radio. I really have. We've had great guests on this week, and we've got plans for many, many more coming up. We're trying to change things around a bit, and I just want to thank all of you for being here. And as always, don't forget, and I know you don't forget, but I got to say it. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left on the truth. Thank you from the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network, America's oldest and best liberal network.